You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is the Classic Business Sustainability Feature.
What has the impact of COVID-19 been on the environment and the market for ESG investing? Now, 91 has just launched its Global Environment Fund in South Africa, and it's a real pleasure to welcome Deirdre Cooper, Portfolio Manager, Global Environment Fund at 91, to this week's sustainability slot. Evening, Deirdre. I hope you're keeping well.
I'm very well, and I hope you're well too, and surviving this extraordinary situation we all find ourselves in.
I am barely keeping my sanity together with a 5 and a 3-year-old at home and all of the homeschooling. And now, prior to joining 91, you were a partner and a portfolio manager and head of research at Ecofin. Before that, an investment bank at Morgan Stanley, where you headed the European Renewable Energy Coverage. And you're an advisory board member for Imperial College's Centre for Climate Finance and Investment. So fair to say that you're pretty steeped in this whole subject of decarbonizing the global economy. And it was a hot topic at Davos just a few months ago. It seemed that the 2020s were going to start by seeing climate change take center stage at board level. And then COVID-19 hit us, and it's now all we talk about. How has this changed the conversation from your vantage point?
So I think the first thing to say is that we are right in the middle of this crisis. So this is an evolving situation. Of course, the one immediate effect we've had is that our cities are just dramatically cleaner than they were before. So we've seen an enormous fall, an unprecedented fall in carbon emissions. Carbon emissions in the UK last month were almost 40% lower than the same period last year. However, because carbon is cumulative in the atmosphere, that's just a tiny blip in the long-term trajectory towards increased emissions and hence catastrophic global warming. So as we sit here today looking out at those clean cities, we do begin to see the early signs that potentially this is something that both individuals and governments are seeing and realizing that this is a blueprint for the future. And of course, like everything, you have to go region by region and sector by sector. Nothing ever moves at the same pace at the same time. So where I am, based in London, in Europe, you see an enormous amount of regulatory support for putting decarbonisation right at the heart of Europe's stimulus package. And I really liked the way the Commission described it, I think it was a couple of days ago, when they published the potential blueprint for the stimulus for the auto sector. They pointed out that there was an enormous amount of debt that was going to be raised. You know, the size and scale of the stimulus packages we've seen are bigger and faster than they were in the great financial crisis. Mm-hmm. And that money ultimately would have to be repaid by our children and our grandchildren. So they therefore said they felt a huge responsibility to make sure that stimulus money was invested in ways that would provide a sustainable planet for those children and grandchildren. So we expect a big stimulus tailwind in Europe. In the US, of course, it's a bit different. Decarbonization is definitely not at the top of the agenda for the Trump administration. Having said that, everything in the US has to go through Congress, and that's controlled by the Democrats. So we do think if the Republicans want to do something for the oil and gas industry, there will also potentially be a tit-for-tat for the clean tech sector. And in China, we haven't this time round seen stimulus, but we have seen rate cuts, and that's very helpful for what ultimately is an infrastructure investment that has to happen.
It'll be interesting to see how the climate issue is dealt with at the NPC meeting of China, which gets underway in earnest tomorrow. What does this now mean for banks and funders of various fossil fuel type energy companies? Already before COVID-19, we saw banks in particular here in South Africa focusing on their glide paths and their funding policies for fossil fuels. There was a lot of shareholder pressure to make those public and to debate them at AGMs. Do you see this just further intensifying that pressure to speed up a change in funding?
I think it will. I think that will absolutely be the case, because where we sit today is that that pressure is coming not just from sustainability people and people who are worried about climate risk, but also as a result of the precipitous fall in the oil price. People are asking those bank executive questions on their earnings call as to what their exposure is to the energy sector, simply because they're worried about receivables problems and write-downs. Now, I do think that pressure, and this is something that's really important and that we've noticed as we've moved through the COVID crisis, needs to come hand in hand with social measures. And of course, in South Africa, you know, more than anywhere, I think you're all extremely aware of how difficult this transition is and how we need to be conscious of this concept we talk about of the just transition, of ensuring that we move forward in a way, you know, that provides jobs for people. There was a really interesting report out in the last couple of days from IRENA, which is the International Renewable Energy Research Organization, explaining that if done correctly, the transition is hugely positive for employment. We could create, they think, as much as 100 million jobs from the transition, and that needs to be done in a thoughtful way, cognizant of individuals and their situation.
So on the bull side, we've got an appetite for environmental action that remains as strong as ever, and we've got potentially a huge catalyst in the form of these stimulus packages announced all over the world. Perhaps on the bear side of the equation, I think many countries on the periphery might just be focusing on stabilizing their economies now, which might just delay a lot of the legislative reform that we've been seeing. Deirdre?
You know, I mean, I think I wouldn't be surprised to see a pause. You know, if this European Green Deal is probably the most aggressive climate policy, that isn't, those bills are not being passed, or at least weren't passed during March, because there was just nobody in Brussels to pass them. Now, as I said, as we move out of that, we would expect to see those measures accelerate. As you said, you know, there are countries for whom potentially this falls a little bit further down on the list of priorities. We see that happening less often, partly because having a climate strategy is being increasingly recognized as being core to the long-term competitive advantage of a country. So if you want to supply, you know, Apple or Microsoft these days, you need to have a low-carbon grid, because they all have programs in place in order to decarbonize their supply chain. Microsoft has a super aggressive target to reduce their supply chain emissions by 50% by 2030. You know, so in this globalized world, every country who wants to sell into these enormous companies has to have a climate strategy. And in some ways, those companies are as powerful as countries in putting pressure on that.
Absolutely. It's a competitive necessity in this increasingly globalized world. Now, how does one get access to this theme, this broad thematic of a decarbonizing globe through the Global Environment Fund? How have you put this fund together?
So what we've done is we've thought about that movement the world needs to make. We need to move from our current trajectory, which looks like we're going to have about 5 degrees of warming by the end of the century, to one that is Paris compliant, that limits global warming to less than 2 degrees. And that movement requires an investment of about $2.4 trillion every year for multiple decades. And we're currently investing less than a quarter of that. So there's just an enormous structural growth opportunity to invest in those companies that are providing the solutions for a low-carbon future. So we have a proprietary screen where we screen global equities to find those companies whose products and services avoid carbon. And they sit across a number of different sectors. The things we have to do to decarbonize include greening the electricity grid, which I've touched on. It includes investing in that grid, making it more robust with more software. It includes electrification, and that's not just cars, that's heating, that's industrial processes. And then there's a huge role for efficiency. And that's not just energy efficiency. Everything that's produced has a footprint. So if you can avoid waste in your process, then you can also avoid carbon. And you need to look not just at the end of the value chain, not just at the guy who makes the electric car, but also the batteries, the semiconductors, the connectors, all the way back to the metals that go into that electric vehicle, because that $2.4 trillion of investment doesn't just go on the end of the value chain. You have to do the entire related supply chain.
Absolutely. Looking at the emissions from the car that you drive, as well as the emissions in creating that car as well, a very important point there. Deirdre, unfortunately, that's all the time we have, but very interesting chatting to you about this big thematic and how COVID-19 is going to interact with it. And great to see that you've introduced this Global Environment Fund into the South African market. Take care.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure.
That was Deirdre Cooper, Portfolio Manager for the Global Environment Fund at 91.